Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a show where we cover the news from the video games industry from the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I am alone, entirely alone. We have kind of entered the period of uncertainty of the birth. The baby is hours possibly away, days away, maybe a week or so, but things have been kind of hectic here. So I'm going to be doing this one alone. It's possible that I'm going to get a few of the first episodes of 2018 alone. We'll see how things go, but hopefully we will have most of them without interruption. We'll see how the next one goes. That one is the one that might be a little bit more difficult than the others. But anyway, baby's not here yet. Hopefully very soon. But for now, I have time to give you a little bit of news and a list of the games to look forward to in 2018, the biggest ones that are going to be coming out, and which ones I am the most excited about, and maybe which ones some of you are excited about as well. Let's start with a quick roundup of some of the news from the past couple of weeks. Not a lot, obviously, since we're in the beginning of the year. It was the holiday season. And we're sort of looking at numbers. Nintendo coming out on top on every possible count. Basically, the Switch is selling incredibly well. They have announced that it is the fastest selling game console ever. In the US, it sold 4.8 million units in 10 months. That is more than the Wii sold back in the day. There is some, let's say, specific kind of accounting depending on when the console releases and the period in which you count things. The Wii, of course, benefited from the incredibly strong launch, and then the holiday season is now counted in that. So I'm not exactly sure if that's like an exceptional thing. Well, it's clearly exceptional, but I don't know if the period you're taking into account matters in this instance, given how their schedule worked out. But it's basically a confirmation, yet another confirmation, that the Switch is selling super duper duper well. The PlayStation 4 is also seeing some kind of incredible record numbers. We're now over 70 million units. When I see those numbers by the PlayStation 4, I have to say, I start wondering if the Nintendo is going to manage to keep on that trajectory. They are at 73.6 million for the PlayStation 4. One of the most successful consoles ever, as we've known for a while. And but I'm looking at the Switch and I'm thinking, maybe everyone who wants a Switch, well, not everyone, but a lot of the people who do want a Switch have already bought it. So I don't know if the trajectory is going to keep being that steep upwards for the coming months, although they still have a lot of potential people that could be interested, especially with the strength of its library already. And we're going to have to wait and see what happens in 2018 for the Switch to see if they can drag in even more people. But really, when you think of it, you have a number of very strong titles already, and it's hard not to recommend the Switch at this point. How things change. I remember a year ago seeing the Switch presentation, the Nintendo Direct, and being so down on the Switch. And yeah, now it can do no wrong. So anyway, the Switch is selling well. Nothing's new there. Paladins, you remember that hero shooter that had the unfortunate, schedule of coming out roughly at the same time as Overwatch. It sort of survived. It's not been as bad as, what was it, Battleborn, which really tanked. Paladin is still there, Paladins. It's a free-to-play game, and they are hopping on the Battlegrounds, on the Battle Royale bandwagon. It's called Paladins Battlegrounds, and it is not available yet, but I really like the idea. I think we mentioned it before, the idea of a hero shooter with the Battle Royale mode, having 100 heroes type characters battle it out and the last one survives is a really interesting concept. The question of loot or, you know, gear that you can equip becomes more important in a battleground type scenario. So I don't know how hero shooters can adapt to that. Certainly a game like Overwatch would have to include significant changes to the way the game works if they were to do that, I suppose. But for Battlegrounds, it's going to be coming out fairly soon. So that's something I'm somewhat excited for. I'm excited for the potential for that that type of mode for games. It also, I think one of the conclusions you can go to there is the idea that every game is going to have a battleground mode going forward, every competitive shooter type game. It's not certain though, because the technical, you know, what the engine must do for those types of modes is very different from when you have, you know, 12, 16 players at a time on a map. If you have 100 of them on a very large map, it's not guaranteed that every engine can handle these kinds of things. And that gets us back to the issue Brendan Green and the PUBG company, back then it was Blue Hole still, had with Epic, using the improvements Blue Hole had made to the engine for it to be able to handle 100 people, 100 players at the same time on the map. Obviously, it doesn't seem to be an impossible change to make to your engine, but it's certainly one that you need to take into account. What else? HTC has announced the Vive Pro VR headset. They just announced this at CES. It has a much bigger resolution, 2880 by 1600. So that is much more crisp. And they also have a wireless adapter. So you can use it without having, you know, the cables you're entangled in invariably. We don't have a price yet. I don't think we even have a release date. And we don't even have some experience actually putting it on your head. It's just an announcement so far. But it seems that HTC is gearing things up in the VR game. They're sort of the first ones to shoot for a new model for their VR headsets in the higher scale, higher quality end of the spectrum. We've seen less, we've seen less capable and cheaper headsets, but we've seen some in the Windows mixed reality space that have been somewhat comparable to that kind of resolution. I think Samsung put one out or is planning one out. So that is something to keep to look forward to if you want a very capable headset and a wireless one. We'll have to see how long the battery lasts on that. Maybe you have to attach something to your belt. But it's probably going to be quite expensive, so I don't expect it's going to set the world on fire when it comes out. Aside from a note from Epic that blames the Meltdown CPU flaw and the fixes to that, they blame that issue. They say it caused a increase in CPU use of about 15% to 45% after patching a server, and that's a concern for sure. So hopefully They won't impact. For those who don't know, it's a very serious flaw that has been discovered on all major CPUs from the past 10 years or 20 years, depending on which flaw you look at. And they need to be patched, and that patch, they need to be software patched, so the system is changed, and that patch impacts the performance of your system. For personal computing, it doesn't seem like it's going to impact us a lot. Even in games, the games just don't use the same kind of operations that are, you know, impacted by the slow factor of the patch. But for servers, it might be another story. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that and see how things evolve there. So that's the quick roundup of the news from the past few days. So now let's move on to a much more interesting, I think, portion of the show, which is getting excited for the games that are coming out in 2018. Let's start with games that are going to be coming out very, very soon. We're just, I would say, two and a half weeks away from Monster Hunter World and Dragon Ball FighterZ, or Dragon Ball Fighters, depending on how you read it. Both of those are coming out on all platforms, well, meaning PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Windows. And Monster Hunter World is one that I'm cautiously optimistic about, but at the same time, I wouldn't even say optimistic about. It's like the franchise has its fans, and they love this game in a way that makes me want to love this game, or the series, I should say. And it seems to me like the series is very difficult and demanding to get into. Everyone says, you know, you have to put in like 30 or 40 hours, and then finally you love it, right? And until you get to that point, it is kind of a slog to get through. Not a slog, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it is certainly not easy to find the fun and to appreciate it. But I would like to. So I don't know if Monster Hunter World is going to be that for me. It seems like it's a little bit more accessible than the previous iterations of the game. But I'll keep an eye on it, but maybe I'll very likely wait for people to tell me, yes, that's the answer, go for it, before I jump in. One game I might jump in a lot sooner is Dragon Ball FighterZ. That game has such incredible visuals that I might have to buy it, even if I'm going to be, you know, too busy changing diapers to have time to play it. For those who are fans of that series, and I think there are more of us in France than there might be in the US, but it's certainly a generational thing. That series has such iconic animations and graphics, and they have managed to recreate those, it seems, perfectly in the game, which is an incredible, incredible feat. And on top of that, it is an Arc Systems game, and they know fighting games. So everything I've been hearing is, not only does it look incredible, but it is also a great fighting game. And as you know, I really like fighting games, so it's kind of the perfect combination for me. I think for people who are fan either of Dragon Ball or of fighting games, this is going to be a must-buy. I think it's going to be a hit in January, and it's a very exciting thing to look forward to. The beta is starting, I think, now. I'm not in the beta, but a lot of people are very excited about it too. So we will see what happens there. Another game to look forward to is Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom. That's coming out, if all goes well, March 23rd on PlayStation 4 and Windows. So we're kind of already towards the end of the quarter, but there are other things. I'm going to go to the console exclusives later in the list, and we'll see that some of them might be coming out at some point in the quarter as well. But yeah, for now, March 23rd, Ni No Kuni 2, again, incredible visuals. I remember playing Ni No Kuni 1 and thinking this is being inside a Ghibli anime, and the game itself was okay. I didn't go to the end. I didn't get into it enough. It was an okay JRPG. Nothing, again, to set the world on fire. I don't expect Ni No Kuni 2 to be that either. They have sort of lost their partnership with Ghibli, but they have retained the visual style. And as I was saying, I remember playing the first one and thinking, this is incredible visually. And when I saw, when you compare the two, like Ni no Kuni 2 is like 10 times better than Ni no Kuni 1. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's one of those things where you thought the first one was perfect. And then you look at the new one and you look back at the first one, you're like, wow, that really wasn't what I remembered. So that is the most exciting aspect of it. Of course, it's a nice JRPG as well. We'll see what happens with it there. That is March 23rd. Also on March 23rd, another very interesting game, A Way Out. A Way Out is Joseph Fares's game. You might remember him from his cursing and screaming at the Game Awards a few weeks ago. But more importantly, he made Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. And that game, in that game, you controlled two characters, one with each stick on your controller, and that was very poetic, very successful indie title. A Way Out sort of takes pieces of that concept and pushes it further. You actually play two characters in the same scenes with a split screen, but it's not like the, you know, co-op games of old where you would both be shooting at whatever was coming your way. Here, you're playing in narrative scenarios and narrative scenes where you're really controlling those two characters. You get the two different viewpoints in the same scene, and the narration part of it is what's important. And you have a story that seems to be fairly interesting. You have people who meet in prison. They're basically not even ex-cons. It seems they escape prison and have things they need to do that are personal, not just, you know, let's break out of prison and do a heist. So there are elements that seem that to leverage the duality of that game. I suspect the most enjoyable way of playing that game is going to be couch co-op. It's possible that you can play it online, but they really emphasize the fact that you should be playing with your friends on the same couch, and that's how you get the best experience out of it. Let me drink a little bit and go on with Far Cry 5. Little bit of a controversy for that game. It was, of course, it started development a long time ago, and it set its narrative in Montana, I believe, but with a sect of extreme religious terrorists, possibly Christian terrorists, and possibly they were white supremacists as well in the first iteration of the game. And it seems like Ubisoft is intending to include colored people. Is that an like non-PC term? I'm sorry, I'm not. That's where the limits of my English as a second language shows. But, you know, people that are not white, and they seem to have included those in illustrations and things like that to sort of the politics of this I would talk about on the Phillies Club rather than Pixels. There is certainly a question of, are you saying that Trump voters are racist, that is thrown into that mix for good or ill? And is this an attack on the little people, you know, that voted for the current occupant of the White House? I would love for that game to be able to be just what it is, and that means a story about a sect of white supremacist, religious Christian extremists going crazy and terrorizing a state, region, whatever it is, without it being controversial, because I don't think it should be. But the fact is, it has tendrils and implications in a lot of other things, and I can understand why Ubisoft is saying, whoa, let's not touch that with a long stick, so let's at least mitigate it. Sure, there are going to be, you know, fundamentalist Christians and terrorists. And that is going to be the one controversy we're going to tackle with this. And let's not add on top of that the white supremacist thing. I can see why they're doing it. Most important thing, is it going to be a good game or not? It seems like it has an opportunity to have an interesting narrative to add to the traditional Far Cry formula. But if it remains in the traditional Far Cry formula, it remains to be seen how interesting it's going to be from a gameplay standpoint. So all of that is going to be happening March 27th on PS4, Xbox One, and Windows, and expect some more discussions about the controversial nature of that game and whether or not it goes far enough or not far enough. The one thing I will add, however, is that I suspect that some of the people who were claiming to defend the artistic integrity of the game designers when they were saying we need to have women portrayed in whatever way they were 3 or 4 years ago that were more derogatory than they are maybe now, hopefully now. I suspect those people who were saying, well, this is the artistic intent, I don't think they would go and defend Ubisoft for the artistic intent of depicting white supremacists in that way in that game. I suspect all of a sudden then it would become an issue of negative identity politics, and all of a sudden they would have a problem with that kind of depiction. So I don't know. Maybe that's speculation on my part, but my experience tells me it's probably we're not going to see the same direction of outcry from those groups. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, though. All right, Wargroove doesn't have a specific date, but it's coming out in the first or second quarter of this year. It's coming out for the Switch, Xbox One, and Windows, and that game is basically Advanced War. Do you remember Advanced Wars, which is a DS, 3DS title? I think it's DS and 3DS. Basically, turn-based strategy. The graphics of it are really reminiscent of that game and of those old-school turn-based strategy games. If you remember, Langleaser, that old game. It might have been on Saturn. Wow, I don't even remember that. But it's there. I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for those types of games. And if you've played that in the 90s, you probably do too. So yeah, Wargroove is going to be coming out hopefully in these next couple of, let's say, quarters. And yeah, Fire Emblem is also a game that might be reminiscent of that. But I've always thought that it's Fire Emblem takes it a little bit to an extreme that is less appealing to me. Kingdom Hearts 3 doesn't have a date fixed yet, although maybe let's check Kingdom Hearts 3. That game is it's 2018. I sort of missed the boat on Kingdom Hearts, and I've always thought it was very strange for Square Enix characters, or Square at the time, to be mixed in with Disney characters. And I've never been a big fan of the Disney characters, you know, the Mickey and Donald Duck and Pluto and whatever those were. They weren't the characters that I thought were cool when I was young, or maybe when I was a teenager, which is when those games would have come out, or a little bit older even. So I don't have a particular attachment to those, but those who do, again, are very much looking forward to Kingdom Hearts 3. RPG, of course, with that very special setting. Probably second quarter, no, I'm sorry, doesn't have a date at all, but it's coming out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Then we get to a couple of very, very big games that a lot of people are excited for that both do not have specific dates, but let's talk about Red Dead Redemption 2 to be announced second quarter might get delayed. It wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world. Might get delayed, but it's coming out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Do not expect a PC release. That is very unlikely to happen, even for the first one, actually. But we might see, well, I was going to say we might see a re-release of the first one. At this stage, they would have done it already. Then it would cannibalize the sales of the second one. But if you have an Xbox One, and you have Red Dead Redemption 1, you can, from the Xbox 360, you can slip it into your Xbox One and play it to your heart's content. Either way, Red Dead Redemption 2, one of the most highly anticipated games of this year. I did go on Twitter and ask people what is the game you're the most excited for in 2018. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 was basically half of the responses. I'm overdoing it a little bit, but it was certainly mentioned very, very often. I loved Red Dead Redemption 1. I thought it was brilliant, spent a lot of time in it. I'm a little bit worried about Red Dead Redemption 2 because, as I mentioned in the show before, I feel it might lack a little bit of charism. Am I saying this right? Sounds weird in my head for some reason. It does feel like the characters are not as charismatic as they might have been in the first one. And then again, I talked about this on my French show. I think it was on the French show, and someone told me, well, look at GTA 5. You had characters that didn't seem charismatic at all initially, and it was actually through good storytelling that they managed to make them relatable and, well, maybe not relatable, but at least get you to get attached to those characters. And if there's one thing that you can't fault, I was going to say Naughty Dog, but them either, but Rockstar for, it's their ability to create a compelling narrative experience. So maybe I should trust in the glow of Rockstar and trust that Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be awesome. The other question mark that we have on that game is the online component, because GTA Online has been so successful. It seems impossible that they haven't integrated some kind of online element in Red Dead Redemption 2. So we'll have to see how prevalent it is, what it means for the game. It might even be more important than GTA 5. Online. We could even imagine some online elements for the single player experience of Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm just, you know, saying random things now. But yeah, so Q2, look forward to that. And then in Q3, also not a specific date, we have Anthem, which is might be pushed to 2019, it's possible, but that game is going to be coming out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Windows. Anthem is a really interesting beast, because it is ostensibly, I mean, the presentation we saw was fairly limited. It was graphically super interesting. The world it depicted was inviting and exciting. And of course, it's a BioWare game. It's their code name Dylan, named like that for Bob Dylan. They wanted to reinvent what it meant to be a video game, just like Bob Dylan reinvented what it meant to be a to do music. The thing is, we don't know enough about that game. Ooh, almost fell here. We don't know enough about that game for me to be reliably excited about it. It's supposed to be a Destiny-like experience from what we understand. The environment, the world, the universe seems very exciting. But those games, as I've said many, many times, those games rely on their replayability gameplay loop. You have the moment-to-moment gameplay, which has to be great, which Destiny has. You shoot stuff, it feels good. If you like it, you're going to love the game. If you don't like it, you're probably not going to be, it's not going to be a game for you. The moment-to-moment gameplay has to be compelling. And BioWare hasn't been the best at creating impeccable moment-to-moment gameplay. Their strengths rely more are more in the area of course, narrative development. Doesn't mean they can't do it, and I think that is probably the thing that is possible to get the most within reach. What is, I think, incredibly more complicated to achieve is the replayability loop. And you have that issue in all loot-based games, be it, you know, World of Warcraft, Diablo, Destiny, Borderlands, of which we might see Borderlands 3 confirmed, announced in the next few months. That is difficult to do. Destiny 1 had it, kind of. Destiny 2 bungled it. The first 100 hours in Destiny 2 were great. After that, that loop wasn't perfect. Even though they've improved it recently. Diablo 1 had issues there because the itemization wasn't done as well as it could have been, and then there were other issues like the auction house that factored into it. So you had to wait until Reaper of Souls for that to be perfected, and now they've perfected it to a level where it's pretty incredible. But the bottom line is, what I'm trying to get at is, as exciting as the game is on its face, and if you play it for an hour, they have to convince the player to come back and play through the same thing over and over and over again to get loot or whatever, however they convince you to play through it. And that is really difficult. It's difficult because people might get frustrated. They might get bored with doing the same thing. It's not easy to motivate people and to make it not boring, you know, that alchemy is very hard to find. I don't think it's impossible. I think Anthem might very well achieve it, but I'll wait until I see a little bit more before I get excited. If I'm being honest, I am a little bit excited, especially since I was so disappointed in Destiny 2. This might be a game that can take its place if it manages to get that moment to moment gameplay loop down. Let's move on to console exclusives. But before we do that, a few mentions of remakes and things like that. A few other games that I wanted to get in just by name. Shenmue 3. A lot of laughter now. I was going to say excitement, but they've gone in silent mode. That's probably for the best. Not sure it will come out in 2018. And if it does, I'm not sure it's going to be exciting, but we'll see. Shadow of the Colossus remake. It was remade for PlayStation 3. Now it's being remade for PlayStation 4 with very impressive graphics, or impactful graphics. That game is probably something to look forward to as well. Final Fantasy VII Remake/Reimagining. That one I'm curious about, because if they just remake Final Fantasy VII, I don't really care. If they reimagine it, I might spend a couple of hours in it just for the sake of it. Darksiders 3 is coming out as well, probably in 2018. Curious to see what they make with that franchise. It was an interesting one with 1 and 2. And Soul Calibur 6 has generated a surprising amount of excitement from people around me. I thought people had forgotten about that franchise, but apparently they haven't. So that is another one to look forward to. And getting your hands on Mitsurugi is always a fun time. That sounded wrong. All right, console exclusives. A little bit more drinking of obviously non-alcoholic beverage. Let's talk about Xbox. The Xbox is in a precarious situation, in the sense that it's not doing badly. Maybe precarious is the wrong word. It's not doing badly, but it's doing about half as well as the PlayStation 4 is doing, maybe even less. And the Switch is already, basically, they've sold, it seems like, a third of what the Xbox One has sold lifetime, and that was achieved in 10 months. So it seems like it could get into third place if you count the Switch as, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, maybe. We'll see. But the PlayStation has exclusives. The Switch has exclusives. The Xbox One has very few exclusives. I mean, we did dig out a few. Crackdown 3 is coming out on Q2, but we haven't heard anything about it since it was announced that it was delayed. So who knows? It's coming out on Xbox One, of course, and PC. It seems like a game that was interesting back in the day, and a lot of people have very fond memories of that game. But I'm not sure that the same formula would be interesting today. And all of those things that they mentioned by the destructible environment that was calculated in the cloud, on the Azure cloud, it seems like trivial today. It might have been exciting back then, but now, like, yeah, sure, you have a building that breaks into a million pieces and falls realistically according to the physics of the game because they can compute all of those physics in the cloud. All right, but have you done anything fun with it? It doesn't seem like they have an answer to that question, and the fact that it's been delayed several times worries me as well. So it seems like a case of, well, let's tone down the excitement, put it out, because we're not going to, you know, waste all the investment we made in that game. And that's going to be it. We'll see. Maybe it will come out and it will be the best thing since, what, sliced bread? Warm butter? Either of those. But I fear that that is not the scenario we're looking at. Sea of Thieves is coming out March 20th, also on Xbox One and PC. And that is another one that I am uncertain about. I know there are a lot of, you know, Xbox One cheerleaders that are very excited about Sea of Thieves. Maybe some of them have been playing the very secretive beta. I think I haven't touched that game. I think the best scenario will be if that game is indeed a fun time to spend together with your friends doing something silly. What worries me is the something silly part is just going to be very trivial. What we've seen until now is, well, you go on boats with your friends and look for treasure on an island and encounter other squads of other pirates. And okay, but what do you actually do moment to moment? And they haven't had an answer for this. Maybe they do. Maybe the game is super fun moment to moment. But it's all well and good to say, hey, come have fun with your friends and that's going to be the game. But you still need to have something to motivate you to be doing the thing. Otherwise, you just pick up the phone and start chatting, and that's it. I think a lot of people minimize that. You know, people say, well, World of Warcraft or Destiny or whatever is just a have fun with your friends type game. So you come to it as much for having fun with your friends and chatting as you do for the game. But even in those cases, the game is half of the reason you get to it, right? So it's a lot less than for a solo game, but it's still half of it. If you remove that half, or if that thing is just 10% of the enjoyment, I think that's worrisome. So what do I know? I mean, I was saying the Switch was in trouble back in, you know, a year ago. So maybe Sea of Thieves is just going to be an incredible entertainment experience, and I certainly hope so. I certainly hope Rare can pull something together out of that concept. But we'll see. It's coming we won't have to wait too long now. It's March 20th. And people have also mentioned State of Decay 2 on the Xbox One and PC. Another game I didn't play the first one of, but has a very strong following. It's one of those survival zombies type thing. And State of Decay 2, it doesn't have a date, by the way. It's only 2018. it is it incorporates lots of multiplayer elements, if I understand correctly, and a lot of people are very excited about it. And that is also a console exclusive for the Xbox. So it doesn't seem like it's one that will get people to buy the console for it. But it's, I mean, that ship kind of has sails has sailed already. But it's certainly something that people who are owners of the console, of which I am, by the way, I do have an Xbox One, might be excited for, and it might be a very pleasant surprise. So that one might be the one that I'm looking at with the most interest out of the three I just mentioned. So yeah, State of Decay 2 might be one that is exciting. And now we move on to four very big exclusives for the PlayStation 4. And in that case, they're not going to be on the PC at all. And all of them are tentatively announced for Q1 or Q2 or Q1/Q2. We don't have specific dates, but it should be the first half of the year. In some cases, maybe even the first quarter of the year. Although, again, we're getting into the first quarter already. If they were coming out even in March, I think we would have dates announced at this point. So anyway, let's start with God of War, which is supposed to be coming out in Q1, but it's looking very unlikely at this point. God of War, I hope God of War is going to be what Gears of War didn't manage to be, which I was excited to see what Gears of War was going to be, meaning in taking its inheritance of a franchise that was a juggernaut in its day and that established an entire genre and type of mechanics, and had visual excellence and was kind of a fireworks of the console's world, and bring it into a more adult period, epoch of gaming. And I think Gears of War 4, for all its qualities, failed at that. It was a great Gears of War. And it wasn't a game that brought it into something more than what it had been. God of War, it seems, is trying to bring that ridiculously male teenage boy fantasy of a character that is Kratos, the ultra violent rage personified character that he was, and make him into an actual character. I think in ways that at least the hope is, we've seen a lot of TV shows in the past few years bring back, or even movies, bring back characters or concepts that we loved from our childhood, and they were so ridiculous that we thought they would never work. And some very clever writers and directors have managed to make them work. That's what I'm hoping for God of War. I hope we're going to get an actual good narrative game on top of the bombastic gameplay, which I hope is not going to go away. I'm not saying I don't want that gameplay. I hope it stays as it was, violent and visceral, but I hope it adds another layer that can speak to the gamers we are today, a little bit older, a little bit less immature, hopefully. And that is what I'm excited about with that title. We'll see if they manage to do that. That is certainly the promise. They might fall flat on their face, but I'm certainly hoping they don't. Detroit Become Human is also coming out, hopefully in Q2. That seems a little bit more set as a launch period. And as I mentioned, the demo from PlayStation Experience got me... Was it PlayStation Experience? I think so. It got me more hopeful for that game. It seemed more interesting than I had what I understood from the previous demos. We've seen so many little snippets of the game that I'm sort of still cautious about it because I'm not sure it's going to manage to achieve what it's setting to achieve. But it seems like they might have found the right formula for the type of game that David Cage and Quantic Dream have been trying to do for the past 10 years, it seems, and not always with great success. So we'll see how it goes. That one is not necessarily a buying it blind like God of War is going to be for me, but it's more of a let's wait for the first reviews. But if they are not too bad, I think it might be a game that I'm interested in. Days Gone is also Q1 and or Q2 at this point for PlayStation 4. And that one is also an interesting one. It's a game that was very exciting when it was first shown at E3 almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago now, with that, you remember the sea of zombies that were running and literally in waves falling on one another. And it was almost unbelievable the way they were modeled, all of those waves of enemies. And then they showed a much more trite post-apocalyptic zombie man-eats-man, zombie-eats-man, everyone-eats-everything world, which we've seen in many other experiences in the past few years. And so that is going to be, whether or not it manages to be more than what it seems it's riffing off is going to be a very important aspect of its success or failure. It might end up being just a good, okay game that you enjoy that is sort of lost in the shuffle. And it might be a really interesting one if they manage to do something with it. It seems from a narration standpoint, they are very, they're managing to do something interesting. But the gameplay is what worries me a little bit. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And finally, also Q1 or Q2 is Spider-Man. And that game I am so excited about because I'm a big Marvel fan. I love the MCU. I think it has its faults, but it is managing to achieve something that is unbelievable, literally something I could not have believed when I was a young kid reading those comics, and that is translating what it is to enjoy comics into movies. And I know some people don't like it, but for me, it definitely works, and it works more times than it doesn't. So that is something that is an incredible achievement that I would love to see replicated in games in a way that I haven't really seen so far. Some games have been interesting. Batman comes to mind. Arkham, I think, manages that the most. And it seems that the gameplay is very much inspired from the Arkham method, from the Arkham combat gameplay. So that's already a good thing for me. But they are also very, it's Insomniac Games, by the way, doing that game. And it seems they understand what that game should be. And we haven't seen a lot, so maybe I'm projecting a little bit. But it seems they understand to make a quality game out of a comic and not a quick making a quick buck. And that sort of aligns with what we've been hearing from Marvel a few years ago when they said, we want to stop doing mediocre games and focus on great developers and partnerships that allow us to make quality products in the gaming industry, in the gaming world. So that might be God of War and Spider-Man, I think, are the games that I'm the most excited about for next year, even more than Red Dead Redemption 2, and that's saying something. The Switch, let's not forget the Switch. We're going to have Bayonetta 1 and 2 coming out as a remake, and then Bayonetta 3 at some point. Possibly. We'll see. We'll see what happens at that point, I mean, I'm saying possibly in 2018. I don't think it has a date for 2018. And then we have some other games that have been announced. Ace Attorney, Yoshi, we have a Fire Emblem, we have a bunch of things, and we might see some other games in the Nintendo Direct that is going to be happening fairly soon, but that is still rumor. I think it's in a couple of days, January 18th, that we're going to get the Nintendo Direct. That is the rumor. So we'll see what happens. And there might be a lot of games announced there. There are some leaks on Amazon's site, but we'll see what happens there. And finally, I did want to close the show with some looking forward to in the future. And those would be games I would love to see in 2018, but I don't think we're going to see before 2019 or 2020 at a minimum. Last of Us Part 2, I will have time to talk about that game, so I won't say too much, but boy am I excited. Last of Us Part 1 is my favorite game of all time, I think. Death Stranding, I talked about quite a bit a few weeks ago. I'm going to let that one go. Metroid Prime 4, we only had basically a slide with the name of the game. No graphics, no nothing. I would be very surprised if it came out this year, maybe next year. Beyond Good and Evil 2, that is also probably not going to be before 2020. My estimation is 2022, but we'll see. I mean, that game is 4 years out, maybe, you know, 3-4 years out, but we'll see. And Half-Life 3, of course, will be coming out soon. Yeah, no, never. Valve is too busy making money on Steam. So that's it for the games of 2018. Honestly, between those that are probably at least half of them are going to be good, some of them are going to be great. Already we have a very solid lineup, especially for the first half of the year, and we know that there are going to be exciting things coming for the second half of the year as well. Maybe E3 is going to... It seems the habit now is to introduce a game at E3. I mean, many people do it. You introduce it at E3 and say it's coming this holiday season. So there might be other very exciting games coming out the second half of the year. And if we only had those that I just talked about, I think it would be a good year. And so that seems like it might be just half of the story. And there are, of course, a lot of games that other people have mentioned, but I'm not going to talk about that. They are more obscure little indie titles. Some people mentioned Super Meat Boy Forever. That is not obscure at all. I'm going through the list of what people talked about. Avengers by Square Enix was mentioned at one point. I don't think we have enough details to expect it's going to be coming out in 2018. We have what else? Let's see. It seems we're... Oh, Shin Megami Tensei 5, Age of Empires. People hoping for a new Paper Mario Cyberpunk might come out in 2018. I think that might... That's from CD Projekt, the makers of The Witcher. I think 2018 is a little bit optimistic, but who knows? What else did people mention? I think... There might have been, Yakuza 6. Super Meat Boy Forever, I mentioned already. Some updates for Street Fighter 5. People mentioned that. Battle for Azeroth, I think I have to mention as well, although it is an expansion pack and not a new game. I think it might factor in. That's about it. I think most of the games we have talked about. I think there are some games that are still in early access that might be counted, like Dead Cells, which we mentioned, Kirby on the Switch, Yoshi we mentioned as well. So there are things. The bottom line is, what I'm trying to get at, is it is going to be another great year for gaming, I think. Maybe not as strong as 2017. We'll have to wait and see, but it seems like it's going to be very, very strong again. 2016 was like that. 2017 certainly was, and 2018 is shaping up to be fairly positive already. So We'll have to wait until we actually have the games in our sweaty palms to confirm or infirm. Not infirm. Yes, maybe. All of that. But I am extremely excited, and I'm hoping I'm going to have the time to play all of those things. We'll see how that goes. I've heard that the first 6 months are not too bad. It's after that that you get really, it becomes busy, fun time with the little one. So, yeah, that is going to be it for this episode. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Not Patrick on both of those. If you want updates from what's happening in my life, I'm sure I'm going to let people know through those mediums. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen for the next episode. I might try to put in one another one alone, or we'll see. We'll see what happens if there's important stuff happening that I really want to talk about. What's certain is that the schedule is going to be a little bit difficult to maintain for the next few weeks, but hopefully after that, in February, I will be able to get back to business as usual. We'll see. I'll let you know as well. Either way, I hope you enjoyed this show. I hope you have a wonderful beginning of 2018. I wish all of you a wonderful new year, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.